You're listening to the PRAG, Unfiltered Adventures of the Blissful Hiker. I'm Allison Young, the Blissful Hiker, sometime professional flutist, sometime voice artist, and full-time pedestrian. Like that small backpacking essential of the same name, the PRAG shares the unglamorous but vital truth about empowerment as badass people who really don't need permission to blaze our own trails in this journey we call life. Thanks so much to Lecky Trekking Poles for supporting the PRAG podcast. If you want to be a blissful hiker, Lecky should be in your hands. Also, Belega, makers of the best blister-resist, non-slouching foot-massaging socks for the long haul. Well, my friends, this is show 52 of the PRAG. She's 1 year old today. And what a great year it's been, sharing stories of my hikes, primarily on the Te Araroa in New Zealand, but also some shorter through hikes of Isle Royale and Lake Superior and the Kekakabik in the boundary waters of northern Minnesota. I am so pleased you've come along for the ride, because going back and reconstructing the story of those hikes and all the feelings, the encounters, and the sounds I heard was deeply satisfying for me. It quite literally changed how I remember my first through hike. And I think how I'll experience through hikes going forward. I mean, for that alone, I'm so glad I jumped in and created this podcast. So here's what I want to do going forward. In a little over 3 weeks, I'll be starting the Continental Divide Trail. It's one of the crown jewels of trails in the United States, a national scenic trail, and it follows as closely as possible the highest parts of the Rocky Mountains through Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. I think you've heard me talk about it, and now it's at least becoming more of a reality. So I'm going to be taking my microphone with me, and I plan to podcast on trail. I hope I can stay on schedule and drop new episodes each Thursday morning as I've been doing this year. But that, of course, depends on where I am and if I have decent Wi-Fi access. And I also can't burn up all my battery in my tent and not have enough to collect sound, take pictures and video, and charge my Garmin inReach Mini. That's the 3-ounce satellite communication system that keeps me in touch with Richard and also has an SOS if things go sideways out there. So there are a lot of things to consider. But that being said, this next phase of the podcast will be on trail and as it happens. I know I've mentioned that you can support me as a hiker slash artist at Patreon. Now, they're a membership platform where you can give as little as $5 per month and get a bit more access to me. I'm going to plan several Q&A cocktail hours along the CDT via Zoom, and we can check in, and that's only available to patrons. So if you're able to support my work, I'd be incredibly grateful. I've got a link to Patreon in the show notes, or you can just go to Patreon and look for Blissful Hiker. And now for some other big changes. I'm going to change the name of the podcast. I had so much fun this year with the play on words that is the PRAG, the unglamorous bit of kit that every badass woman needs on trail as metaphor for empowerment and not needing permission to get out there. Also the play on rag itself being like a broadside. But the name doesn't exactly capture what I do, which is hike. And any name that you have to explain maybe isn't quite working out. What I want is to clarify who I am and what I'm doing. And also there's this whole idea of brand consistency. Now, I'm not a brand. I'm a middle-aged solo female thru-hiker. But I do want the name of my podcast to match my trail name and make it patently obvious what the show is about. So, drumroll please. The new name of my thru-hiking personal essay found sound creation is Blissful Hiker, Walking the World. Okay, I know it seems really obvious, but after some thought and a few conversations with some of you ardent listeners, and a feeling of wanting to drill down and focus, this very simple descriptive name of my website and blog, my Facebook and Instagram profile, as well as the name gear manufacturers put on the packages when they send me stuff, makes sense to just keep using. So I proclaim from hereafter, this podcast shall be known as Blissful Hiker.
And there was much rejoicing.
As you might have noticed, we were unable to get me to the end of the Te Araroa. I did complete the actual trail on March 4th, 2019. March 4th, isn't that nice? A nice little metaphor. It's my timing of weeks right now that are left before the CDT and how much longer it takes me to wrap up the stories of the trail that didn't exactly jibe. So instead of rushing to the end, I thought it might be fun for you to hear some of the stories I created while on trail when I wasn't exactly sure how things would end. Stories of sharing huts, managing a massive trail detour, and accepting that we can't do everything, so learning to love what we can do.
When hiking the Te Araroa on New Zealand's South Island, hikers plan their days walking around stopping points, places near water and safe from the elements. Sure, you can camp if you want, and can find a flat spot in this wild, mountainous landscape. But most hikers, or trampers as they're called by Kiwis, plan to stop in a hut.
Kiwi girl, heaps.
I'm not heaps, yeah.
I'm actually going to try and meet up with her in Christchurch when I'm done.
Hut culture is not entirely unique to New Zealand. In the Alps, for instance, you can stay in a refuge and not bother carrying a tent. Even New Hampshire's White Mountains has a series of huts moderately spaced along the alpine terrain. But in New Zealand, there are 1,400 huts scattered over a country with a smaller population than the state of Minnesota. And their value is deeply embedded in Kiwi culture. Huts started in the late 19th century as simple structures with a simple purpose: to shelter from the storm. They were used in the backcountry by farmers, miners, sheep musters — those are people who bring in the herd — and for animal control in a country filled with introduced species like possum and stoat, wreaking havoc on the bush. Over time, Kiwis developed nostalgia for huts. So it was only natural that at the dawn of the 20th century, when New Zealand officials realized they had beautiful country worth seeing on foot, huts became a way to create an egalitarian infrastructure around tramping and enjoying the beauty of this land.
Oh,
I think I might have met him. That's ringing a bell, like a Czech guy.
Hut life demands patience and consideration for each other. It's first come, first serve. And everything is shared. The water in a tank of collected rainwater from the roof, the cooking space, usually just one long counter, the drying area — remember, New Zealand can be very wet — and the bunks themselves, which may be in the Maori tradition of one long shelf where each hiker arranges their mattress in a row. But when you have your own tent, you don't experience the shuffling, the snoring, the talking in one's sleep, the vulnerability of sharing a space after a long day of multiple days in the mountains. Most of us are dirty, even if we jumped in the water hole. Our clothes smell. We're famished and we eat with our mouths open. We're all having individual experiences, and we don't want to make others feel bad if we walk faster or further. The hut equalizes, and it brings us together. When the weather is poor and we have to strategize as a team, or when we just need to know what's ahead from someone going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, at least I was with you.
Yeah. You can say, okay, I stay there, da, 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 and believe me, it was so crazy, we must go out, and the weather was so bad.
I love the huts of New Zealand. And in the huts, I sleep surprisingly wonderfully.
Weltruste. Schlaf lecker.
Et de beaux rêves.
Süße Träume.
Gute Nacht und schlaf süß.
So how long have you been walking?
Oh, I started on October 29th.
Right, yeah.
And, I'd say, about 4 months.
We're nearly there.
I know.
When the Te Araroa tramper arrives in the South Island's Queenstown, the trail hits what's called a hazard zone. Lake Wakatipu is in the way, and the road around it is narrow and windy with no shoulder and lots of gawking tourists. The only safe thing to do is to get a ride around the lake.
Well, not anything.
But it's at this point a tramper can decide to add a few extra days and rather than head straight to the greenstone track where the TA continues, she can walk on a great walk, meeting the official trail later. I got to the start of the Great Walk, the Root Burn, in two rides, camping in rain, and not sure I'd manage the 20 miles in wet, sloppy conditions. You see, it's kind of awkward to know, as a thru-hiker, exactly when you'll be somewhere. So the huts on this very popular trail are usually sold out when you arrive. That means you have to walk it all at once, all in a day hike. But great walks have gorgeously groomed tracks. The walking was easy. Gloomy skies added drama. Overflowing rivers added thrill. But I have to say, I get nervous in wet and cold. I'm nervous I'll succumb to a chill and shiver with hypothermia. So I ask a ranger what it will take to camp. And he quotes me $135 for a bunk, plus a $50 fine. But I'd have to sleep on the floor. I definitely don't want it that badly. So I keep walking as the trail comes to rock, a bit slippery, but so well manicured it seems that every rock has a flat, stair-like surface. And yeah, I'm moving fast to complete the circuit in a day, but I'm also 3 months plus into a thru hike, and I'm the most fit of my life. And the views, I mean, now I'm in a giant bowl of rushing water, hundreds of waterfalls lining the cliffs and racing down to meet in the center. The wind just lashes at my face. I go up and over to a beautiful lake now. The dramatic peaks above wink at me through the mist. The sky isn't blue, the air isn't calm, but this moment still fills me with wonder, perhaps more in its natural state of stormy indifference. It's dangerous and inhospitable, even if striking to see as I pass through, lingering temporarily before desiring the safety of shelter. The walk is long and cold, sidling a ridge. I meet a French family who dresses their little girls in plastic garbage bag raincoats. The views open up some, of glaciers nestled in dark spires. A massive waterfall is thrown like a rope in a hurricane, soaking me to the skin. In time, I reach a lake and leave the trail for a backcountry hut, where the fire is blazing and the smiles shared easily. I claim the last bunk, thrilled with my trail detour, the effort and the drama.
You wouldn't say you were on the South Island, you say you're in the South Island, you'd say you're in the North Island.
Hikers on the Te Araroa, who've walked in the South Island of New Zealand, compare their experience to the North Island, saying that the North's 1,600 kilometers are for the feet, a warm-up act for the 1,400 kilometers of the South Island for the eyes. There's no doubt about it, but I gotta tell you, my feet got a heck of a workout, and as Kiwis would say, the South Island was hard as. I mean, the weird thing about the TA is that the trail has no standard. One day it's a road walk, dangerous for sure, but flat and taken with long strides. At one point, I even rode a bike. But much of the time, I was challenged in ways unexpected. I made several alpine crossings. Steep ascents on slippery schist delivered me to exposed ridges above the clouds. Some days, Chamber of Commerce blue, the views indeed designed to delight the eyes. But it was big work on the feet getting there. It was also big work when managing the days that wind and rain threatened, slowing my progress as each step was carefully taken. Looking down at my feet kept me safe. And it also opened a different world where plants of the tundra thrive, a more subtle kind of eye candy. In the South Island, I learned a new word, to sidle, which means to walk in a furtive and oblique manner, to creep. My walking slowed to a creep on narrow, eroding strips of trail along the side of steep slopes, hence the word sidle. This was no place for mistakes. In the South Island, I learned a new skill, crossing fast-moving, cold, deep rivers. And am I being repetitive, pointing out this was also no place for mistakes? American writer Karen Salmonson says, "The best things in life are often waiting for you at the exit ramp of your comfort zone." Was I out of my comfort zone? You bet. I was very scared sometimes. And forgive the pun, in those rivers, I was definitely out of my depth. Walking in the South Island of the TA was hard, on my feet and on my resolve. Sometimes I'd be so focused on getting through, I couldn't see anything but my feet. So it's kind of full circle. That feast for the eyes that I spoke about earlier, promised on this second half of the trail in the South Island, I certainly had a lot of it. And it was beauty itself that led me and fed me all the way to the hard-earned finish line.
One good thing about you guys, you're fit.
Once I completed walking the Te Araroa, I was awash with emotions. I felt pride that I did it, in spite of how difficult it was. But I also felt a little let down. Like, that's it? It's all over now? The following day, I continued south, taking a ferry to New Zealand's third island, Stewart, known in Maori as Rakiura. I felt raw and tired as we bumped and lurched over the waves in a kind of funky state of shock and indecisiveness. On the ferry, I met other TA hikers heading to Rakiura to walk a full 9-day circuit. I kicked myself, not having enough time to make that happen for me. I was flooded with what's called FOMO, you know, that nagging and completely useless fear of missing out. Even so, I packed olive oil half-heartedly with barely enough food for the 5 days I intended. Instead of hitching a ride to the start, I walked, taking a detour that brought me to a deserted beach, just me and a bucket full of metal balls for a game of pétanque, me against me, the sand between my toes. At the first hut, I met a new kind of hiker, less experienced and way less fit than a TA hiker. I swam in the frigid water with a couple of Aussies. I played cards with three sisters. And I hunted for kiwi at night under the Southern Cross. When a few women arrived, aloof and full of conceit having completed the circuit, it drove my insecurity home. I found it difficult to hang on to the satisfaction that I had done something equally great. In fact, much harder. I kind of felt like a wimp around these girls. Things intensified the next day when TA hikers passed me on the circuit, rudely cranking a podcast on speakers and shoving past me as though I wasn't there. I climbed to a mountaintop those TA hikers ignored in their race to make it a long day. Heart-stopping views greeted me at the top of the bottom of the world, but I couldn't rid my mind of this shorter hike not being enough, not crowning the end of my epic odyssey. The following day, I walked to the sand dunes of Mason Bay, one of the most significant natural areas in the entire Southern Hemisphere. Black rain clouds danced above a wild and dangerous ocean as I walked to a whale graveyard, heartbreaking yet oddly beautiful in their beached repose. At Mason's Bay, I met a woman pushing herself to be out in nature in spite of the fact that she suffered from a disease that was slowly robbing her of her ability to walk. I felt humility meeting this woman who savored every bit of this landscape and its inhabitants in spite of her handicap. I felt ashamed, entertaining the thought that my 5-day gift of being here in this paradise was somehow not enough because I didn't walk all of it. I had to leave Rakiura knowing the circuit was left undone, inviting me back one day to complete it. I was forced to embrace JOMO. That's the joy of missing out. And somehow I left full and happy, because it turned out that not only was what I'd done enough, somehow leaving a little undone made it all that much sweeter. It gave the memories I created some sizzle, because now I had something to dream about in my future.
Aw, it's so sweet to go back and hear the woman I was at the end of the Te Araroa. I did have 4 days before I needed to head to Christchurch and meet Richard at the airport, so not quite enough time on Rakiura Island to do the circuit. But it was pretty good anyway. It's funny how I ended up hanging out with those people at the hut, and we'd head out looking for kiwi. I mean, we'd hear them, we'd see evidence of their digging, and we even saw footprints, but they never, ever showed up for me. So Richard ended up taking me to the National Kiwi Center in Hokitika on the West Coast, where I could finally see a kiwi up close and personal in an enclosure. We're going to leave the Te Araroa for now on Blissful Hiker and move on towards the Continental Divide Trail. Now, I should mention that you can follow the entire Te Araroa story in pictures and words at my website. I was so disciplined. I blogged every single day, and it's up right now at blissfulhiker.com. Just look for the hike diary. And there's also lots of stories of walking in France, on the Pacific Crest Trail, in South Africa, and Argentina. It's all there at the website, blissfulhiker.com. So moving on, I'm going to have new sounds to collect and more stories to tell, and this time with the Continental Divide Trail. And it's going to be while I'm on trail. Though next week, well, I don't start for another 3 weeks, so you're going to hear me preparing food, getting my gear together, my permits, and trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing on a long trail. You can support my work by becoming a patron at Patreon. There's a link in the show notes, or just look up Blissful Hiker on the Patreon website. And I really appreciate your listening and rating and reviewing the show at Apple Podcasts. That does help people find me. You can drop me a line anytime at blissfulhiker.com. And until next week, kia kaha and happy trails.